As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
Nerd talk, talking about nerd talk, yeah!
Welcome to Nerd Talk Plus, our weekly deeper dive into the stories that make this world nerdier. From Odyssey's Nerd Talk, I'm your host, Darth Citalopram. There we go, nailed it. And he's the co-host, and equally as important, and not equally paid, he's Grand Moff Depression.
No, it was Grand Moff Anxiety of the Star Destroyer Depressor.
Excuse me, it is Grand Moff Citalopram of the Imperial Star Destroyer Depressor.
Okay, there you go. That's my official title.
Yeah. That's our combined role as this episode. Yeah. Okay, great. Neither of us is a scientist or very good at words, engineer, or supervillain. But if you are, let us know what we get right and what we potentially maybe get wrong. It's unlikely, but who knows? If you could tell a friend or write a review or something like that, or, you know, just, you know, share something on social media, we'd appreciate you. Or just holler at us with your answer to this episode's question of the week.
This episode's question of the week is which sense of your 5 senses, or 6 if you're Haley Joel Osment, which sense would you hate to lose the most? And if you are already like blind or deaf or something like that,
4.
You are. Well, if you're deaf, how are you listening to this?
Loser. When I read this, Brandon, I read, which sense do you hate the most? And I was like, it's definitely smell. I hate smell so much.
Says the guy that has like a really hard time with cilantro.
Oh yeah, ugh, it's so gross.
Which sense would you hate? Which sense do you hate the most is a better question.
Yeah,
like of all of the senses, like
if you had to give one up, which would it be that you hate the most?
Yeah. All right. So all 5 senses, right? You got hearing, sight, smell, taste, feel. Right. Like I guess if you got rid of feel. I mean, and I feel like feel covers so many spectrums. It's like the feel of a burn on your hand versus the feel of like getting kicked in the nuts. Like those are very different feelings.
Or if you're into it, touching a boob.
Right. Yeah. So those are all different feels. And I feel like if I were to say which sense I hate the most, it's probably the sense of like when you are about to have diarrhea, but you can't quite yet.
The sense that I hate the most is called anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
Darth Citalopram strikes again.
I have a 6th sense. What is it? Oh, it's just that I get panic attacks.
All right. Well, all this time that we spent on remote calls has this weird, creepy side effect as we sit on one right now to record this. The video companies have all this data on how we behave. And like what our mannerisms are and whether or not they're supposed to be recording it or not, it's out there. If you're looking into your phone, if you're sharing to Instagram or whatever it might be. So this one company, a startup, wants to help salespeople sell things better. They're studying emotions of how people behave on video calls on a scale that humans can't even detect and using it to better understand our reactions to things so it can become better at setting us up to buy stuff. I find this to be absolutely diabolical. right now, like, social media companies show us things that they think will keep us online longer. A lot of it's really negative because we get this, like, visceral reaction to it. And that's no secret. Everyone kind of is starting to learn that, and, like, specifically with politics over the last several years. Well, and like, hey, don't get me wrong, it's effective because, like, I have a glow-in-the-dark dinosaur shirt and a projector lamp that makes the background into look like a nebula. And, like, that's, they don't show that to my wife. Like, they show her shoes almost exclusively, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you start to think this question about what happens when they learn to work us up like they know how to do, and then they can give us the perfect, like, we'll call it solution to whatever problem we're anxious about at exactly the right time when they can read our emotions and know to strike perfectly to take advantage of us. Like, if you know, if you're so worked up that you hate the let's go Brandon or whatever, and then sure. They're like, by the way, did you know there's an uprising at the Capitol building today? And you're like, yeah, I'm going, and then you like go to it and you don't even know what you're doing there anymore because you've been manipulated. Imagine when that can start to be used not just to sell people things but for evil.
This reminds me of like I guess a good metaphor for this or would be, you know, a boxer or two people fighting, right? Like, if you have a strategy going into a boxing match or some sort of fight, which
punch him in the nuts. Yeah, got it.
Yeah, right. No, but your strategy can be to weaken somebody to a certain point. If you know somebody, like when they get to a certain point of like being tired, they drop their fists, and then that's when you can go in. You don't go in for that face shot right at the beginning. You wait until you've like made them think that you're going to punch them in the side, so they drop, and then you punch them in the face. And I think that that's how I am trying to understand this, is to say that like they can understand when you're at your most prone to buy based on some sort of micro data that they're able to take based on your behavior online from like Zoom calls. So
yeah.
So what are some of those factors that they're looking at? I mean, in that story, are they looking at like just where your eyes are going, or like what other behavior off of your off of just a Zoom call where you can really only see from the nips up?
Oh, he's got wood. Let's hit him with the sail now. Show him the tits and then make the sail. I'm not suggesting that salespeople need to show their boobs. I'm saying show a picture of. I'm sorry. That was not nice.
Yeah, of course. No.
Yeah, it's the statuses that people get into, or how you can, like, if there's distraction, if someone's becoming, if they are losing focus, you can slip something by them that they might not be paying attention to and get them to catch up late to what you're saying. There's just little tiny, I don't understand it very well myself, full disclosure, but there's little tiny behavioral ticks that happen that when they recognize it, not only could they, like, work you towards something like your rope-a-dope metaphor, but also they could work you towards something, or with the use of a predictive, let's call it an AI for a very general thing, be able to suggest what the right move is at that moment. So you could always be being fed what the right thing is, and then really get rid of the human salesperson and the pictures of boobs and just move into a machine doing it all anyway.
I mean, we can't get rid of all of that.
Yeah, keep the boobs. You're right.
Keep
okay.
The pictures of the boobs.
Yeah.
Tell that to my 4-month-old son that we're getting rid of boobs, and he would be very upset.
Wow, poor guy. That's early, man. I feel bad for him. I figured 16 years would be about the cutoff point.
That's what they cut him off?
They just cut the boobs right off.
Yeah, right. It does seem diabolical. I mean, it's like the next evolution from, you know, my mother-in-law gets very worked up about this every time she will talk to my wife or me about a product or something that she's like, have you heard about these new baby jump toy things that blah blah blah, and then she gets an advertisement for it on Instagram or something like that, and she's like, oh my gosh, the Facebook is listening, or like the phones are listening to us, and it's like, I mean, like, this is already predictive AI. Like, you are showing interest in those baby type things across the rest of the internet, and it's, you know, when you're accepting cookies on this website, they're using those to track you across all of your other websites, and then like whatever baby jump up toy is like building a profile of a general type of person to say, like, I want to reach this person with this advertisement. Well, hey, yes, you did have that conversation. That just goes to show how good their profiling is to be able to reach you.
Yeah.
It is freakish because you're like, how does all of everything that I do on the internet all day, how does that all end up pointing me toward this thing that I also had a in real life conversation about, but it's because who you are online is an extension of who you are in the real world.
You ever look it up and see how Facebook has you labeled, like the things that it thinks about you, where they have all this data compiled and they're required to be able to show it to you? It's like you have to go through 10 different steps to find it, but it'll be like, we're pretty sure that you're this age, of this political alignment, that you're into these types of things. And so it starts to build this profile about you. It's profiling, and then it starts to show stuff to you to see how you'll engage with it. And that's happening on all of these platforms all over the place. The scary part to me, though, is when it's no longer about capitalism and it becomes about the, you know what isn't good is the white people. And I use white because I don't want to pick some other race out. I'm not saying that I'm worried about people coming for the white people. I'm worried about everyone being under attack. But the idea that, like, you start building up resentments and you start controlling people into no longer just buying the sweet new Chinese knockoff shoes, but you're like, it would be pretty smart if we all collectively got rid of that bad group, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. And you suddenly, it's a big leap to make, but ultimately, if you can get people worked into a spot where they would buy a pickup truck, that's a huge decision or a huge investment. Or, like, let's say someone was pushing you for divorce or something. Mm-hmm. What if it was like feeding you these ideas over and over and our emotional response didn't allow us to process it with our frontal brain?
I think what makes this different than, because you could argue that a lot of that is already happening, right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of that stuff is already happening, except for the fact that it's not been quite as automated as what you are now talking about, which is an AI taking that and being you, like, on one end of it, being in, you know, maybe whatever malicious country or whatever malicious organization you might be a part of, like a specific political party, being able to say, hey, click button that says, I want these people to get upset about this thing. And then the AI takes care of the rest of it based on micro behaviors that you're showing across the internet, but also what you're showing from the nips up on Zoom.
Yeah, and just imagine that it's like such, you can take a lot of shots with this too. You don't need it to be, it doesn't have to be a home run every time. It can just be small incremental things until you get someone worked the way you need them to be and then hit them. It's exactly your boxing analogy. So I'm like an allergy. Is that what I said?
Analogy.
I think it's because I got these allergies, my analogies.
An alropist?
Yes. So what happens when this is someone hoping to become the next dictator? Like, as someone pointed out on the Futurology subreddit, they said that basically we're going to hit Blade Runner before we get to the harmony that Star Trek promised us. And like, yeah, I think that that's a given, is that we have to hit rock bottom before we figure out how to reach the top. So...
lots to look forward to for our children, huh, Greg?
Yeah. Then I read this other book that the name will come to me here in a second. It was The Rational Optimist, that says that, like, what I'm talking about, this story specifically is used to get us riled up so that way we don't make progress, so that way people in control can continue to progress. That really nothing is actually that bad. It's just that we get this narrative suggesting that everything is terrible and then we run with it. And then people who like making jokes about the end of the world, like me, start talking about it. And then here we are. So,
yeah.
Wow, this is
it's like self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like we all are like, oh, it's gonna definitely be, let's not use Blade Runner, let's say WALL-E, right? Like,
yeah,
oh no, we're going to trash Earth. Like, that's a, we're gonna
focus
trash
on
Earth.
The important part, Brandon. I get to be fat.
Oh, get to be.
Yeah, dude. Well,
sorry.
Hey, talk to you next week, Kenan.
I mean, do us both a favor, Kanan.
The first tweet ever by former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, I don't know if you remember this from a year ago, March, it was sold for $2 million as an NFT, which still
$2.9 million, right?
What did I say?
You said $2 million.
$2.9 million as an NFT. Next week's episode, it's Brandon and Kanan.
Next week's episode is just Kanan and AI Kanan.
Oh, man, that's what I want. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the weirder things to pop up out of the pandemic was this NFT phenomenon, right? Where people are like, no one can describe it without using the terms blockchain or cryptocurrency. Like, there's no, crypto and blockchain are the two things you need to describe it, and no one can do it without that because no one really knows what they are.
Yeah.
Anyways, one of the weirder things to come from the last few years is people selling NFTs, and oh, I just said all of that. God damn it. The NBA is one place that's capitalized. My friends buy NFTs of shots that people took in NBA history. I don't understand it at all. But this guy paid $2.9 million for the idea of owning a tweet. Jack Dorsey's first tweet. Oh, good. Then he went back and tried to resell it. And according to theguardian.co.uk, I believe, or maybe .com, as of last Thursday, he had his top bid was $6,800.
So from $2.9 million.
$2 million.
$2.9 million.
Yeah.
To $6,800.
As someone pointed out, he lost $2.9 million by the time of that publication.
Yeah. What I don't understand is with certain things, like the only thing that provide, and we've talked about this on this show before, like the only thing that makes something valuable, like an NFT or like anything that you could own, is how much other people might want that thing that you have. If it's a scarce, if there's some sort of scarcity behind it, right? Like you can only own one original Mona Lisa. You know what I mean? Like you can only own. One of a limited run of shoes or whatever it might be. So that's why you see sneakers and things like that race off to these insane values, because hey, there's only so many of them, people want them, like authentic, created by the actual manufacturer, whatever it might be.
Sure,
there's knockoffs, there's things like that, but the thing with NFTs is like, great, you've just spent $2.9 million on that tweet because in the all of that craze of the time, you thought NFTs were going to be sick, and like you were going. This was an investment for you. What are you?
Well, beyond that, like,
what are you going to do with that? What does anybody want with that?
There's no difference. Like, if you buy Nyan Cat and say I own Nyan Cat or the first Jack Dorsey tweet, I can go to it as a person that does not own it and still get the same exact value out of it. There's no benefit to owning it other than bragging. Well, and if that's the case, just be like, I'm a billionaire and I could take shits on people and no one cares if that's what you, if you're into bragging. Like, that's like effectively what is going on. So,
to your point, it's like owning it does nothing. So, they talk about these guys that own, quote unquote, own a shot that was taken in the NBA, or like, I own the World Cup, you know, Messi's 100th goal captured on film, right? Like, do you actually own the rights to that? You know, did Fox Sports or whoever it is, like, sell you the right, like, the exclusive rights to owning that thing, so that way anytime somebody wants to broadcast Messi's 100th goal, you get money for it? They have to come to you to license it? No. No, you bought a file, one video file of that thing. And it's like this with the Jack Dorsey tweet. Like, unless he deleted that tweet and there's no way to, like, even go onto, like, the Wayback Machine and screenshot it or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's what value do you get out of being the person who owns the screenshot of it, or, like, the code, the source code behind the tweet, or whatever it might be, other than the fact that, like, I, Brandon, could go back and screenshot it. And or just read it, and like, I
you can Photoshop a reproduction of it and blow it up to a million feet tall and post it on the biggest cliff on Mars or whatever if you want. Like, there's no actual, like, your Mona Lisa example is just perfect. It's just like there's one Mona Lisa and that's it. There's not like,
oh, but there's only one of these files of this monkey with headphones on wearing a, you know, Harry Potter glasses and a cape, a Batman cape. There's only one.
How much, like, did that go for? Because I definitely
sounds awesome, right?
Want that.
Yeah, but it's like, but this is the argument. It's like, oh, there's only one of them. Like, so it has inherent value. It's like, yeah, but what is that to anybody? You know, like, it's it outside of this hype craze, it behind, you know, this NFT thing, like, outside of that, nobody's going to care.
They're going to know.
They're going to know. How are they going to know?
They're going to know. They're not going to know.
This is how we're going viral on TikTok. Somebody make an NFT of this conversation.
So in Bad Guys and Billionaires, we talk a lot about the billionaire space race that's happening, where they're all building these things and none of them are really actually doing anything in space. And even when they
are going to call something a space race, can we actually just, like, do some racing in space. Like, send all the billionaires to space, get them in some pod racers.
Yeah, I was going to say, no. This is pod racing, okay? This isn't space racing.
This, like, is pod racing.
Get out of here.
Come on. I just, like, space race sounds so cool until you realize it's, like, takes place over years, and it's a matter of, like, it's just spending a bunch of money to get
and
a rocket
into space. And you need $55 million to do it, and, like,
it's
okay.
Like, no, let's line up all of these rich guys' wiener rockets next to each other, launch them up, and see who's the first one to space.
This is the smartest thing you've ever said. By far, I want to see all of the wiener rockets lined up to see how the space race truly goes. And like, yeah. If Rubin's racing, so if you happen to, sorry, Florida.
I just don't like if you line all these rockets together. I don't, you know, like you see all you ever see at one point is one rocket going up right at a time, and you don't have anything necessarily compare it to unless you were to like overlay a bunch of videos of all of these rockets going up, which I guess we could do. But what if the goal at the end of the day, like, we need to take this back to like the early version of like the 24 hours of Le Mans, right?
I'm in.
It's like safety is out the window. We're stripping everything off of this bad boy, and we are just like sending it as fast as we possibly can to get to space. Doesn't matter how it comes back. Like, we're just sending rockets to space as fast as possible.
You mean the Chinese method?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or the Russian method, where you just blow it up and send it into deeper space.
Shout out to China, who just had their first three, what do they call them? Taikonauts return from 6 month stay on their new space station. And on that first trip, where they had a long term, occupancy, they were much more progressive than we are. And one of the three people was a woman. And so congrats to Russia, or not to Russia, to China. What a weird slip. That's weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, I bring up the billionaire space wiener rubbing race for a purpose. A new company has plans to get regular old squishy humans to see the glory of our blue earth marble. It's about time. They're Space Perspective, and they've designed a floating lounge that would dangle below one of those like weather balloon looking things that looks like it can't possibly inflate on the surface, but then as it gets higher, it actually continues to pull someone near orbit. Not quite, okay? It doesn't, it's like, which one of those doesn't, it's like the Virgin Galactic. It doesn't actually go to space.
Yeah, Richard Branson's didn't actually cross the Kármán line or
whatever. Yeah, which is like 60 miles up. This one goes 20 miles into the sky. But it's a nice, slow 12-mile-per-hour ride up to this line, wherever, this 20 miles above Florida. You wouldn't actually be in orbit, but you're still like to get there is three times higher, but you're still like able to see the curvature of the Earth in a significant way and the blackness of space. Now, you also wouldn't have to pay the ungodly fee Bezos charges to strap a wiener-shaped firecracker under your ass and be shot into the heavens. This one would gently float you to where you could see a lot of Earth's curve while serving you drinks from the lounge bar. They hope to launch in 2024. For me, now, it's $250,000 to ride this thing, so that's still impossible, right? But that's like if you bought a house in 2018 and then you went to sell it right now anywhere in Washington, you probably got enough equity out of it to be able to take one flight up there. And to drink space boo sounds awesome.
There's something about like, so I'm a big soccer fan. We both are. And when I went to London a few years ago, I went to a match. Mm. And one of the biggest differences about going to a match in the UK versus in the US is
you float there to get there, right?
Yeah. You have to float
via balloon
to get there. That's how I got to London.
Yeah, great.
As like very Mary Poppins feeling.
just busted out his umbrella and like, woo!
Yeah. One of the interesting things that I thought was interesting about this is that when you go into a match in anywhere in the UK, for the most part, I don't know, I've only been to one stadium, but from what I understand, this is the rule across the stadiums, is that you are not allowed to have alcohol at your seat. So all of these people in the stadium, like at halftime, go into the concourses, they drink a couple beers, and they go back out for the second half. The reason they do this is because they want to prevent anybody getting carried away, getting too drunk during the match. Obviously
throwing a beer on the
throwing
pitch.
Stuff onto the pitch, right?
Yeah.
So like one of the reasons they do that is, you know, they don't want people getting carried away in this highly passionate, extreme environment. Now, I'm not saying that a space balloon is where people are going to get super passionate and crazy and possibly angry. However, getting people drunk 20 miles up doesn't seem like the best idea. And I also know that at altitude, you're more likely to get drunk faster. So
you listen here, you piece of garbage. My messy NFT is my property.
Is that because they were showing highlights of Lionel Messi's 100th goal and they said, I own the rights to this, damn it?
Yeah, that's exactly it, right?
There's also something that I know about high altitude and the way that we experience taste. This has nothing to do with our question of the week, by the way, which is a reminder of to be thinking about the question of the week, which sense would you hate to lose the most? Yeah. Not which sense do you hate the most, although we are also curious about that. Hit us up on Twitter or tell
us. Oh, wait, what's our link tree? We have a link tree.
Oh,
we,
it's nerdtalkplus.com.
Oh, there it is. Oh, I bought the website.
Yeah, finally. We're legit.
Whoa, what?
Nerdtalkplus.com. Go tweet at us what sense, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, something that I know is that altitude, your sense of taste actually gets diminished the further up you go. So, like, that's why food on airplanes is always full of salt because it has to be in order for you to be able to even, like, taste it. Just because even at a mile up or however, you know, 30,000 feet, really... Yeah, 6 miles, 69 miles up. I bet you can't taste anything.
Then you get to space, bro.
Gross. And so anyway, what are they putting in these drinks so you could be able to like actually taste it? Or maybe they're just being like, hey, up here, we can actually do shots of Everclear because you can't taste it.
That's fair. A new study out of Cambridge suggests that the lifespan of a species likely has to do with the number of DNA mutations and how quickly they occur over a lifetime. And that's regardless of the species size. There's some great examples that they provided in this article that I can't remember where it's from. News.yahoo.com. That does not help. Anyway, for example, a naked mole rat and a giraffe, two wildly different mammals, have about 100 mutations per year and lives that are about 30 years long, while a mouse has about 800 mutations a year and lives for just a handful of years, like 3 or 4. Humans have an average of 40-something genetic mutations per year and live to be about 80 years old. These are all just rough numbers or whatever, but the study suggests that there's a critical mass for errors that a living being can sustain, like a jackpot number after which a body is unable to function correctly. So like you get to this like number, it's like 3,000 or something like that, and you get there, and that's when old people start to get weird looking and start to be like unintelligible and just kind of sort of fall apart because their body has now been around long enough, they think, that there's been enough mutations that it's far enough away from the original human that it's kind of like wonky. This blows my mind, and the research that's going to come along with it seems incredible. The notion that if they could stop these mutations from happening as quickly, you could significantly expand lifespan.
Or reverse even reverse mutations, right? Like if we know what, you know, let's say what they think the ideal DNA is supposed to be, depending on who you talk to, you're going to get very different answers about that. But what you like, the healthiest DNA or the longest living DNA or whatever it might be, like being able to try to match that. You talk so much about like genome editing and sequencing and things like that. Like the closer that they get to figuring out, you know, well, actually what I see in this is like, we'll be born with a certain, you know, there'll be some sort of test that'll say, hey, here's your sequence, your DNA sequence or whatever it is. It is this.
Did you have to take the test from my butt? Yes.
Yeah, no, we don't have to, but it's juicy. So
we got this test from the aliens and they suggested the only way to do it was via probe in the butt. So
in the butt.
Sorry.
So like we're going to have this number. You say, hey, you were born with, you know, 200 mutations, let's say that, from whatever the baseline they end up determining is. And then you'll have this number. Maybe you could like throughout your life be able to be like, all right, I just turned 31, which I do this week. And I've started to be like, okay, parts of my body are hurting in weirder ways than usual. Yeah. Like I'd be able to be like, all right, I'm going to go into the doctor.
It's
see how many mutations
probes
I got left. It's the butt probe. It is. That's what it was.
But still, you can see, you can have a blood test to see how the... to see how your blood butt is mutating. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, butt
yeah,
sorry. blood butt sounds like if there's an upside down to the Batman like DC universe, blood butt is one of the Man Bat's super villains that he has to fight. Blood butt, we meet again.
Only he says it in like a weird set of squeaks that a bat would make because he's Man Bat.
And it translates to,
damn it, Man Bat, you know I'm Blood Butt, I don't speak bat.
You said what, Blood Butt? No, you're thinking of my cousin Mud Butt.
So anyway, yeah, you can get at 31 on your birthday every year, you can get your blood bud tested and see how many mutations you've hit. Like, spent a little too much time on the almost zero G balloon and got some space radiation. You just took a few years off your mutation life, buddy.
I wonder, like, this is part of why the what's his face, Captain Chris Kelly and his brother Scott. Kelly, right? Like, part of the reason that, so Scott is the,
you know,
one
how I remember
that,
this because how? The Neurosis lead singer, his name is Scott Kelly, and it would be hilarious if he was the one that went to space for a full year. Because
wait, isn't he also have like a doctorate or something? Or am I thinking of, is it the guy in The Offspring is like also a doctorate in like physics or something?
Scott Kelly does not even have all his teeth, just for the record. He does not. Okay. Not that you need to have teeth for a doctor.
Oh, you're saying you need to be a doc? You need to have teeth to be a doctor?
I'm just saying that he hasn't been able to provide himself with dental care, let alone the educational opportunities to get his doctorate.
I'm a professional. Look at all this blood in my butt. I don't have, when I lack in teeth, I make up in butt blood.
Ew.
Anyway, what I was saying is that the reason that Scott and Chris Kelly are so interesting, the reason that these were the twins that were chosen for Scott, I think it was to live his whole, like to live an entire year in space, mm-hmm. was because these guys are identical twins. They wanted to be able to see how their DNA sequences differed after a year in space when you're exposed to much higher levels of radiation from the sun and just from all of the other space crap that I don't really fully understand. Like, how was their butt blood different when they came back down? And so I'm curious, like, if anything like that will have, you know, the older that those guys get, and they start to realize, you know, everybody's going to have different amounts of mutations. When I said ideal DNA sequence earlier, what I really meant was that they're going to come up with a baseline of what they believe is like the healthiest DNA sequence, right? Like, there's not going to be an ideal, you know, red hair, 6'5", whatever it is, Gregor, you know.
Not ideal.
Not ideal. But Chris Kelly and Scott Kelly might have different DNA sequences for all mutations for all sorts of reasons. But like, as these guys get older, are they going to start to be able to see like different mutations and how, you know, maybe Scott, who spent a year in space, is going to age faster when they get to a certain point?
Yeah, it's interesting because I saw some, you know, headline randomly that was like, we could talk all we want about going into deep space, but, or even to Mars or whatever, but we still don't have the protective equipment to keep people alive.
Yeah.
Because of the toll that it would take on you. So I can only imagine what a year going around the Earth every 45 minutes would do. I don't even.
Yeah, we set up a colony on space, or on space. we set up.
Put my flag, and there we are on space. The Space Mountain.
Oh, that's a fun ride that I think they got rid of for that whole Star Wars thing.
Oh, they did?
I think so, yeah. I think that, like, Star Wars World took over that, where Space Mountain used to be. And I think they still have a ride there, but now it's, like, Star Wars theme, which is probably cooler. Anyway.
I heard too many people had the blood pooling in their butt, so... that blood butt.
Yeah. Sorry. you go into Mars, and, like, all of a sudden, this 80-year...
Into Mars.
gosh darn it. How do planet work?
I'm replacing you for next week with my 4-year-old who can tell me everything about the planets. Oh, I should do that. I should record him talking to me about the planets.
Oh, absolutely.
As a segment on here. That's not bad.
He'll be much smarter than me. So we set up a colony on Mars with a bunch of people who are supposed to live to roughly 80, but it turns out they all develop butt cancer, you know. Butt blood cancer at 50 because of their exposure to radiation.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you stop standing out there with your anuses to the sky, it's like Mars yoga.
Never mind. I can't say the thing I was going to say. It's too offensive.
As in none of this other stuff has been.
This was going to be worse. Yeah. I guarantee. I don't even know where we're at with this.
Now, okay, so I would like to get to the question of the week, because let me tell you, one feeling, one sense that I would not want to have is blood cancer. Okay.
Question of the week is, it's time for your question of the week, Brandon.
This week's question of the week is, which sense would you hate to lose the most? Like, Catherine, my wife and I have, the wife that I have access to.
Yeah, thank you.
And I have had this conversation in the past, is like, would you rather, like, you know, would you rather games, right? Like, would you rather have penis where your nipples are or nipple where your penis is, right? Like, questions like that. Sorry. One of these would you rathers that we play is, would you rather lose your sight or lose your hearing?
Dude,
right? And so I feel like
swap is so good. I'm so bad at word games like this, like associative things like that. Like, I spent 10 minutes trying to come up with a response to your hypothetical Star Wars, and then forgot that I came up with one. I should have said, I'm Grand Moff Satylopram of the Imperial Star Destroyer Depressor. And he's been keeping his identity secret. He's the Brandalorian. That's what I came up with, but then I forgot.
All right, stop. We're starting the podcast over.
Okay, just
starting this show over. Going back to the top. Brandalorian, dude. Oh, that's so.
God, I'm such an idiot. Anyway,
I had a friend that used to call me Brando Calrissian, I feel like was also good. Which I feel like would also work for Childish Brandino.
I'm so bad at these things. I have to write them down, otherwise I forget. And here you just rattle them off like that. God, my brain just doesn't work like that.
The question will come up. And like, this might seem insensitive to people who are missing one of these senses. But, like, would you rather lose your sight or lose your hearing? You know, you'll get people who are, you know, really interested in music, or, like, the way that they really find joy in this world is playing or hearing music. And you'll get those people who, like, are like, absolutely, I would rather lose my sight. And then you'll have other people who like to look at boobs. And they're like, no, I would absolutely much rather lose my hearing, or boobs, or pictures of boobs. Who knows? One of the other. So which of the five or six senses, again, Haley Joel Osment, I'm looking at you, I would prefer to lose the one where I saw dead people if I were him. But which sense?
Can you imagine how weird Easter is for that guy?
Oh my God. I see dead people. Everybody's like, nah, we all see him, man. Come on. We get it. Yeah, Jesus. He's right there. He's like, I see dead. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
We know. Jesus is Bruce Willis. We got it.
Guess what movie I've never seen?
You've never seen The Sixth Sense, have you?
But I know the trope. Like, even I'm aware. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so which sense, if you had to have hearing where your nipples are, nipples where your hearing is, which sense would you give up?
Dude, if you have, imagine having ears where your nipples are.
The twister would be terrible.
Be like a whole new thing about, like, when the principal grabs you by the ear. It's like, now you get to file an HR complaint.
He gets fired for sexual harassment.
An HR complaint because you're also a teacher, and the principal has grabbed you by the nipple ear and pulled you away.
So wait, what's the appropriate? Let's assume that you had to grab somebody by one or the other. Do you grab them by the chest ear or by the head nipple?
Or the ear nipple? No, it's like one or the other, right? Like, you don't have ear nipples and chest ears.
And what if it was a three-way swap? What if the ears ended up where your wiener was, your wiener ended up on your nipples, and your nipples on your ear?
Wait, hold on. What ended up where my wiener is?
Your ears.
The ear?
Yeah.
I feel like everything would be muffled at that point, so I don't know if I'd take... Maybe if your ear ended up
where
your
nipple is.
Your
own farts.
Oh, I do. I already can. I would put my nipples where my wiener is. I suppose that would make my ear go to where my nipples are and my wiener near where my ears are. So
he can still wear sunglasses. That's all that's important.
You'd look like Ahsoka Tano. Okay. So,
MIT scientist.
Gregor, no, I'm curious, which of all of the senses, of the non-ear nipple senses, would you, nipple ear, either way, which sense would you actually hate to lose the most?
Which one are we giving up? Wait, which is it?
No, which one would you hate to lose? The question was which sense would you hate to lose? So you're like, you work in audio medium, you're a radio guy.
Yeah.
Would hearing be the thing that you would hate to lose?
No.
No, okay. Sight.
I would switch careers.
Yeah, okay. Fair
because
enough.
Texting is fine and the world is beautiful, even the bad parts. And to lose the ability to visualize. And there's so much more data too, like just if you make a recording of 30 seconds of video from us talking right now or 30 seconds of audio and it's the same quality level, video is, you know, a factor of 10 bigger than audio. And so there's so much more coming in, so much more on the, you know, via photon than it is via sound wave. And so I would certainly hate to lose sight a lot. The one that I would gladly give up, seriously, is scent or taste or whatever
smell,
it is.
Smell, really, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't, like, I love eating bad food, but, like, it would be awesome to not, like, walk by. Like, today in the break room, someone ordered Thai food, and, like, I was too late to be able to stop and eat, but also knew that there was Thai food there, and that was, like, a real kick in the nose dick. And, like, so I would have rather just not
known. I was going
known.
To ask you, would you rather have a nipple where your nose is?
Nah, I think that'd be too weird for people, as opposed to a wiener where my ear is.
As opposed to wieners where your ears are. Yeah, that's where I draw the line.
Nose, no one touches the nose.
My nose pull? Absolutely not. Now, if I could get a wiener where my nose is.
Like Gonzo from the Muppets, like, yeah. Let's go. Well, the reason that this question comes up, which sense do you hate the most? Which one would you get rid of, Brandon?
Which one would I get rid of?
Yeah.
I would probably, I think I would get rid of hearing.
You don't want to hear. You want to be able to taste, but not hear.
I think so. Yeah, I love food. I love to cook. I love to like make bread and pizza
hate listening.
Dough and bake. And I hate listening to things. So no, I took a few years of sign language in college. In high school, actually, not college. And I got to spend a week with a group from my class where we went down to the what's the school called? But it's in Vancouver.
Dungeon.
It's like the Vancouver School of the Dead or of the Deaf.
Of the Dead.
Of the Deaf.
Haley Joel Osment's out there being like, you don't want to go in there, dog.
Like they have the sickest school song, except nobody can hear it. It's just death. It's just Neurosis.
Yeah, Scott Kelly. Cool.
Yeah. So I got to spend a week with all of these people who were deaf and weren't able to hear, and like got to spend a bunch of time and just really like we weren't even supposed to talk or, you know, even to the other people that were with us on the trip.
Yeah.
We were only supposed to sign. It was supposed to be fully immersive. And I loved it. Honestly, it was super fun. The quietness wasn't weird because everybody still had a way to communicate. So being in that kind of environment, I thought was amazing. And so just to see like there's still so much that you can do. And I would hate to lose sight. I would hate to lose taste because I just that whole everything that just happened there. It's just I know exactly what just happened.
I sneezed for everyone that's that can't see or hear it. For all of our blind or deaf people.
Are blind or dead people.
Sup, Jesus.
Anyway, we get it, Bruce Willis. We get it.
Okay, so the point of this question is MIT scientists started their own lab to figure out how to restore hearing loss in humans. And the early indications are that it could potentially work. They had some really positive experiences here. So the phenomenon of hearing loss is typically tiny little ear hair things that get like burned away from overexposure or just from whatever the damage might be. And they don't reproduce. So once you lose these little fibers, then you lose hearing and then you don't get it back. Well, they think with the help of some little molecules, it says, they could inject those into your inner ear, reactivating the cells responsible for growing the tiny hairs. But, like, if you heard me correctly, perhaps you didn't, it involves getting a needle poked inside your ear. Now,
so it's like hair implants, but for your ear. We got ear Rogaine. butt blood for your. Maybe you take a really hairy butt.
No. So yeah, they think that they can stimulate the things that shut down after, you know, that. So when you're in utero, they're still working to grow the ear hairs, and then once you're born, they stop. So they think that they could maybe like kickstart these things to be able to produce more, and people could get some hearing back. And as a guy who has worn headphones every single day for the last, you know, 25 years, and loves wearing earbuds for some stupid reason, which I shouldn't. Then, like, sorry, my wife just texted me and I got totally sidetracked by it. But anyway, but yeah, like, it, there's potential there that as we get older to not have to wear, what do you call them, the in-ear things and be able to...
Hearing aids. It's like, you think about going to all of the, you know, you and I are both music fans. You got to go see No Teeth Neurosis, I'm sure, a few times. I've seen all sorts of shows, and when you think about... I'm always saying, I have a friend who's a drummer, and he's a great drummer. His name's Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
And he's not listening, for sure. But he's a great drummer, and he takes such good care of his ears because his dad ended up getting tinnitus the older he got because of the amount of like concerts and stuff that he went to. So my friend, knowing that it's in his family, wears earplugs earplugs, right? He wears them to every concert that he goes to, and he's like the nerd at 30 years old who's wearing the earplugs in the front row at Fleet Foxes or whatever it is. But he's also going to be the one that's able to hear his grandchildren someday, unlike, you know, the rest of his dumb friends.
You know, I had a couple hundred bucks left over on my FSA 10 years ago, and I was like, I don't know what, I'm going to lose this money. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to get in-ears. My buddy Brian Thorpe had them, and I was like, I'm going to go do that. They're a couple hundred bucks, and they go and they put this goo into your ear, and then you find out that you're actually at a... And then I got to take that out. That can't be a thing.
Yeah.
And then they fill your ears full of goo, and then they make these in-ears, and I still wear them all the time because there was a guy behind me at Sounders matches who would just be like into my ear the whole time. Yeah. And so I started wearing them to Sounders matches just so I could like not walk away with hearing pain. And if you get the professional ones, the filters that they put into them are equalizing filters, so you don't lose any quality.
Right.
It just, like, if you put a piece of foam into your ear, it, like, does not preserve the audio quality.
Right, but it's not the same as, like, the swimmer, you know, the swimmer's earplugs? Have you ever seen those?
It's like wax balls
that you stick into your ear, and it does what you're talking about. It molds to your inner ear like that, and I wore these when I was on vacation in the house next to the house that we were staying in, had, like, these loud dogs. These things worked amazing. They blocked...
Yeah.
all of the sound out, but I didn't get, well, like if I was worried about the sound quality of the dog barks, then, you know, I would have been upset, but I wasn't, right? I just was trying to block all of that noise out.
I played in bands forever, and like you put in earplugs and it sounds like crap. And so now you're just playing hoping that it sounds okay. And that's not the joyful part of doing this. Like playing a guitar and having a cool amp and combo is like, that's an awesome part of it. And so to where
going deaf and losing my hearing is rock and roll, baby.
But you know who has crazy low stage volume is Radiohead. Mm-hmm. They maintain, like, because they don't really play any big huge bangers or anything, and so they have talking volume. Like, you can talk to each other on stage. They keep their volume so low, and they do everything in post or everything, so that way they don't ruin their hearing while they're playing. Yeah. And I think that's like again, call me that nerd at 30 who was doing that and was a square, but like, I already put my hearing through a tremendous amount, and then I go to a concert and like I still hear great through these things, and you can change out the filter amount, so you can have a 5 dB decrease or a 15 or a 25 or complete. And yeah, like, take that piece of wax, drill a hole through it and then put a little filter in there. And it's like, suddenly that's the equivalent of what I'm wearing, like the swimmer ones, only it's brilliant. It is, if you like going to loud things at all, like I'm going to a Kraken game on Wednesday, and someone was like, it's the loudest experience I've been to. And I was like, oh, great, I'll bring my in-ears. Yeah. And then I'll still be able to hear my friend talking next to me and everything. It'll just cut down the excessive volume.
Now, it's like, hear this, listener. If you are currently listening to this in ear pods or, you know, what do they call those? Earbuds or AirPods or whatever brand or whatever. Turn it down right now. Turn it down a little bit. Or off, really. Just turn it off. You don't need to listen to any more of this. Nerd talk, talking about nerd talk, yeah!
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.